Last week, Congress passed a bill that will triple non-military aid to Pakistan over the next 5 years. But as much as the money is needed, the aid package was not greeted warmly in Pakistan. Blake Hounshell, managing editor of Foreign Policy magazine, joins me now to explain why some of the conditions of the aid package have angered some Pakistanis, and I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show today. Hi.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks for having me.
What does non-military aid get used for usually?
Well, in Pakistan, a lot of it goes into people's pockets. But in theory, it's supposed to go to things like schools, roads, bridges. It's intended as a way of boosting the capacity of the civilian government in Pakistan. Historically, the military in Pakistan has been in the driver's seat, and that's still the case today. So it was intended explicitly to boost the civilian government and broaden the relationship beyond just a military-to-military relationship.
Now, you say it goes into people's pockets, mostly members of the military or other parts of the government as well?
Well, it depends on which part of the package we're talking about. Now, there's Pakistan insists the military aid is really reimbursements. It's not assistance. And this is a very, a point of pride for the Pakistanis. They say they're just being paid back for services rendered in the war on terrorism. Okay? But they also have been, lobbying for years now to get advanced military equipment that they say they need to run a counterinsurgency operations in the northwest frontier area, things like night goggles and attack helicopters. But they've also been accused in the past of diverting U.S. equipment toward the border with India. And so that's one of the sort of friction points that you see today.
Well, since September 11th, 2001, the U.S. has spent almost $9 billion in military aid, and another $3.6 billion has funded diplomatic and economic initiatives. This is on top of all of that. Will this new aid package mean more attention is being paid to civilians, to winning? Is it about winning hearts and minds?
Well, I think that's part of it, but again, as I was saying, I think it's about shifting the power dynamics in Pakistan, and Pakistanis have said the United States is trying to micromanage Pakistan, and one of the most fraught conditions in the Kerry Lugar aid package that just passed the Senate recently was that the U.S. had to report back and say that the civilian government was in control of the military. Well, if you know anything about Pakistan, that's ludicrous. Everybody knows the military runs the show there. So the military got all up in arms, and they got the opposition party to get out on the streets and raise some alarm bells about this.
So this is mainly the people most dissatisfied are the military leaders, and then the political opposition sees this as an opening for them. I'm assuming members of the ISI are also unhappy. What about the general public?
Well, the general public in Pakistan is I don't think it's going to surprise any of your listeners that it's there's a very hostile environment there toward the United States. There's a lot of anti-American sentiment. And anything that smacks of a kind of a neo-colonial approach really rubs people the wrong way there. So, even though the ostensible purpose of this aid package was a good thing, and the Zardari government, President Zardari, stood by the package initially and said, hey, wait a minute, we want this money. $1.5 billion a year for the next 5 years is going to go to good things. That didn't, really carry the argument, and they had to come back and get the United States to acknowledge that these weren't really conditions on Pakistan, they were conditions on the United States.
Well, Senator Kerry, who not only wrote this legislation with Lugar, also is chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, attached a statement to the legislation after it was approved that said, the legislation does not seek to compromise Pakistan's sovereignty, does not seek to impinge on national security interests, or even micromanage any aspect of Pakistan's military or civilian operations. You would think that he was addressing all of their concerns.
Yeah, I mean, Kerry is sort of trapped between U.S. politics and Pakistani politics, because there's been a lot of criticism over the last decade that money, U.S. taxpayer money, has been diverted into pockets in Pakistan. And so a lot of the conditions that are in the legislation were intended to assuage Americans about where their money was going. But then it raised the hackles in Pakistan. And so I think the administration and Kerry has been trying to thread the needle there and say, well, you know, we're putting conditions on there to a domestic audience in the United States while telling the Pakistanis, don't worry, these conditions don't mean anything. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
But among those conditions, the Secretary of State must certify on an annual basis that Pakistan is pursuing its fight against Islamic extremists and the civilian government remains in control of the military. Well, that's going to be a hard thing to certify, isn't it?
I think it's going to be impossible to certify. And I've heard from people that were involved in crafting the bill that there were people that, you know, raised the point, you know, what's the point of adding this, you know, clause in there if we're not going to really enforce it? If it's just going to be a formality, you know, why bother, you know, raising political hackles in Islamabad? And I think those people were right. I mean, all this has been a sort of a pointless, you know, hoopla over something that we intended to give them anyway.
Well, are we signaling our desire to see more civilian control of the government?
I think that's pretty clear. And I think, you know, don't get me wrong, that would be a great thing to see. But I don't think, you know, attaching a condition to a piece of U.S. legislation is going to be the way to do that.
Well, one of the conditions of the aid is that Pakistan must cease supporting extremist and terrorist groups. Is that because the United States remains concerned about government links to various terrorist networks? And where are we talking about? Are we talking about the ones that we're most concerned about in Afghanistan, or are we also talking about terrorist groups that are involved with Kashmir?
Well, you know, there's a whole range of different groups that we're talking about. Certainly, the Pakistani government has, you know, historic relationships to militant groups in Kashmir, and I'm not sure that those groups have been those ties have been severed. You know, there are a lot of cases where different groups have been banned, but all that's happened is they've changed their name to something else. And then you have the situation where the Pakistani government is going after groups in South Waziristan right now, but those are groups that have caused trouble for the Pakistani state. And then there are very similar groups with very similar ideologies that are causing trouble in Afghanistan that get a pass.
My guest is Blake Hounshell, managing editor of Foreign Policy magazine. I guess the thing that's upsetting them the most is that this requires that Pakistan document how aid is spent. The U.S. Government Accountability Office found last year that between 2004 and 2007, 76% of U.S. reimbursements to Pakistan's army were paid without adequate documentation of how the costs were calculated. So that was military. What about non-military aid? Have we seen similar problems?
Well, of course. I mean, there's a great history of corruption over in Pakistan, and you know, there's this political scientist at NYU, Bruce Bueno de Mesquita. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's written a book just now, and one of the things he says is that part of the point of the aid is actually a bribe. It's a way to get the Pakistani civilian government and military to go after al-Qaeda, go after the Taliban, in exchange for us, you know, looking the other way if some money goes into people's pockets.
Well, the foreign minister of Pakistan, Shah Mahmood Qureshi, went to Washington to stress that Pakistan wouldn't be micromanaged. Did his visit have any impact? And is Pakistan in a position to refuse the aid money?
Well, I don't think they're going to refuse it. I mean, I think part of this is a little bit of kabuki theater. You know, there's politics over in Pakistan about this bill, and there's politics in Washington. And I think both governments want the money to go through. I mean, one of the good things about the money is that it's a five-year package, and so it signifies a commitment from the United States to Pakistan. One of the longstanding problems in the relationship has been Pakistan has this fear of abandonment because they were abandoned after the jihad in Afghanistan in the 1980s. The United States, you know, turned the other way, started to get involved in other parts of the world, and of course Pakistan developed nuclear weapons, and that led to Pakistan's isolation. So there's a long history of mistrust between the two countries, and this bill, ironically, was intended to overcome that, and it seems to have had the opposite effect in the short term.
Well, shouldn't there be mistrust on the U.S. side? After all, Pakistan supported the Taliban.
Right. Pakistan did support the Taliban, and in fact, the ISI, the intelligence service there, created the Taliban. But you have to understand that Pakistan does things like this for strategic reasons. They feel that Afghanistan is sort of their backyard, their safety valve in the event of a war with India. And so they're very concerned about Indian encroachment in Afghanistan. So I think in order to address the problem of Pakistani support for militancy for the Taliban, we have to look at the wider context and address the fears about India first and foremost.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is scheduled to visit Pakistan in the coming weeks. Will that be an important trip in terms of U.S. relations with Pakistan? And do these two aid packages provide contrast with the approach to Pakistan that the Bush administration had?
Well, I think Secretary Clinton is really going to go and try to mend some fences over in Pakistan on her trip. But I think if you look at the statements of U.S. officials coming out after this controversy over the aid bill, there's really not going to be a meaningful change in the way these aid packages are administered. I think there's a lot of tough talk, but at the end of the day, we're going to look the other way at things that might make us uncomfortable.
Well, it seems like a weird situation to me. Here, the military is upset about strings being attached to an aid bill that actually will help Pakistan. And at the same time, it's involved in a military offensive against its own Taliban in Waziristan, something that the U.S. government would want.
Mm-hmm.
Are we agreeing to certain things but having very different world views? Is that part of the problem here?
Well, every institution looks first and foremost to protect its own prerogatives, and I think that's what the Pakistani military has done here. They saw a threat to their own sort of institutional clout within Pakistan. And they moved very quickly to mobilize opposition to those provisions in the Kerry-Lugar bill they didn't like. Meanwhile, they have an interest in going after Baitullah Massoud and his network in South Waziristan. And so they did that. But, you know, one thing that's really interesting to note is that they're not going after, other groups in North Waziristan. In fact, the military drove through North Waziristan and had a truce with some of the tribes there in order to get to South Waziristan to attack these other folks.
So they're only going after the people who are attacking them. The Taliban has just instituted a string of bombings targeting government sites. I don't know what impact that's happening in Pakistan, or has that dampened support for the offensive? Or is that making people wanting to go ahead?
It's backfired on the militants, I would say. I'd say it only strengthens the military's hand politically. If you look at the statements of all the Pakistani political parties, nearly all of them lined up in support of this offensive when they launched it. So I think that the militants have really overplayed their hand here. Like they did recently in the Swat Valley when there was a Taliban offensive into parts of Pakistan that had been historically known as the Switzerland of Pakistan. Sort of normal, ordinary Pakistanis looked at this in horror and said, we want you to go after and get these guys.
We have less than a minute, but just one more question. Will we continue to look the other way despite these bills because Pakistan is so tactically and geographically important to the United States right now?
I think the United States, has to hold its nose and work with the Pakistani government and military. I think we make more progress, working the margins rather than, trying to have some sort of confrontation. I think we've gotten results. They're not perfect by any means, but by, being patient, looking the other way at things from now and again, and trying to make the most of a bad situation. I think that's what the Obama administration is doing here.
But also be aware of the fact that Musharraf suffered a bit because he was seen as too much in support of the United States' goals?
That's absolutely right, and you'll see from the government that they try not to be, you know, hug the United States too closely, or the opposition parties start squawking.
Blake Hounshell, I have to leave it there. Blake Hounshell, managing editor of Foreign Policy Magazine. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
On tomorrow's show, Paul Schaefer, leader of the David Letterman Band, stops by to talk about his memoir. Then Chuck Klosterman, author of Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs, on his latest book, Eating the Dinosaur. Also, National Book Award winner Sherman Alexie discusses his new collection of stories, plus what the skills used by designers like Bruce Mao teach us for solving everyday problems. The Leonard LoPage Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Stephanie Bernhard and Angela Sheldon. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.